Welcome to the November 17th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. Today, our service is led by our minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and her sermon is titled Contemplating Compassion. The podcast begins with a reading read by Worship Associate Kimberly Homer, and it ends with Rev. Pam's benediction.
Today's reading is by meditation teacher Sharon Salzberg. We need mindfulness and kindness now more than ever, and the two are related. Paradoxically, many of us feel an increased sense of fragmentation and compartmentalization in our lives, given the networked world we're living in. The antidote to these feelings is mindfulness, gathering our dispersed attention again and again. The practice of shepherding our attention back to the present, even an incalculable number of times, helps us find the power to be kind to ourselves. We can let go of our laundry list of work items once we get home to be with our family members, even if our Google Calendar gives us a ping. We may be compelled to ruminate or obsess, but a commitment to mindfulness, to being present, is a gesture of kindness to ourselves. We react to our compulsions with compassion. We open up and feel a subtle movement of our hearts. This movement of the heart is like the sea moving close to the ocean floor. It is so subtle, but affects everything above it. The same power of kindness is available to us in our relationships with others. When we really tune in to our experience in each moment, the result is feeling a sense of connection between all of us. Not a connection that has anything to do with iMessaging or emailing, but something deep. We can see that kindness isn't about just being nice or polite, but about a sense of ethics and a fundamentally shared experience that need not be related to a religious belief system. Seeing kindness as profound and powerful helps us differentiate kindness and niceness. When someone looks at us with the concern of kindness, we feel seen. There is a sense of connection that is being mutually recognized, and in that, we feel our value as humans.
Happy belated International Kindness Day. Did any of you celebrate it? It was Wednesday. Did anyone? Kimberly did. Anyone else? I admit that I didn't know there was such a day, but I guess I'm not surprised. It seems every day has some kind of celebration. So why not kindness? Started in 1998 by the World Kindness Movement, its purpose is to highlight good deeds in the community, focusing on the positive power and the common thread of kindness which binds us. Given the state of the world, I'm inclined to agree with Sharon Salzberg that we need kindness more than ever before. But what does kindness have to do with our theme for November? Attention. When I think of attention, I immediately think of mindfulness, the process of purposely bringing one's attention to experiences occurring in the present without judgment, which one can develop through the practice of meditation and also through other training. And when I read Sharon Salzberg's article, which is titled, "A New Vision of Kindness Starts with Paying Attention," I was especially intrigued by the notion that mindfulness and kindness are related. So here we are, exploring mindfulness and kindness. contemplating compassion. Now, I'm guessing many of you know something about mindfulness, especially those of you who have a meditation practice. In the past 40 years, since Jon Kabat-Zinn first created the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, mindfulness has become quite a movement. When I searched the word mindfulness on Amazon.com, in just the book section, I came up with 40,000 results. And I was intrigued and heartened by the number of books aimed at children and wished that I'd had one of those books when I was a child. Of course, Kabat-Zinn didn't invent mindfulness. Its history stretches back thousands of years to the Eastern religions, to Hinduism with yoga, Taoism with Qigong, and Buddhism with meditation. And mindfulness also has had its place in Christian, Muslim, and Jewish contemplative and mystical practices. Now, as Unitarians, we can look back to the Transcendentalists. Kabat-Zinn refers to Henry David Thoreau as a predecessor of the interest in mindfulness, together with another eminent Transcendentalist and Unitarian, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Kabat-Zinn writes of Thoreau's 2 years at Walden Pond as, above all, a personal experiment in mindfulness. He chose to put his life on the line in order to revel in the wonder and simplicity of present moments. Now, my own introduction to mindfulness came through meditation, the simplest kind of meditation, simply sitting and paying attention to the breath as it entered and left my body, feeling the air come into my nose, fill my lungs, and expand my belly. No thoughts of the busyness of life, just being present to the breath. No Sanskrit mantras to try to pronounce and to remember, simply the breath. What could be easier? For me, what could be harder? I couldn't sit for more than a minute before I started thinking about the sounds outside the house, the ache in my shoulder, the lessons I needed to plan, the grocery list I needed to fill. Oh, yes, the breath. I was bad at mindfulness. I was bad at meditation. But it turns out that wasn't true. I was missing a major component of mindfulness meditation. As Kabat-Zinn writes, mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally. And that last word, non-judgmentally, is the connection I make to kindness. When we are kind to ourselves, when we don't judge ourselves. I remember a teacher telling me that the point of meditation is not so much constantly being present to the breath, but when our minds inevitably wander, noticing it has wandered without judgment. And then bringing our attention back to the breath. So I figured if noticing it and bringing it back was the whole point of meditation, I was getting lots and lots of practice. I was really getting to be a good meditator, which of course is also not the point. I have to tell this story. One time I was meditating with my husband and my mind wandered and I thought, from the outside, I look really good at this. Nobody knows what's going on in my head. But the connection between mindfulness and kindness that Sharon Salzberg referred to was much more concrete and scientific. Her article links back to one in The Atlantic, written by Northeastern University psychology professor David Destino, who has explored whether mindfulness meditation has positive effects not just on health and memory and other cognitive skills, but also on compassion. An experiment had one group of people who participated in an 8-week meditation course led by a Buddhist lama, and another group who were on the wait list for the class. So they all wanted to do it, all right? In a follow-up visit to the lab, ostensibly to test attention and memory, each of the participants' compassion was tested in the waiting room. With all the seats taken by the subject and a couple of actors, a person on crutches came into the room, leaned up against the wall because there weren't any seats, and sighed audibly. The other actors ignored her and stayed in their seats. Destino explains, situations like this, in which other people seem to be ignoring a person in distress, are known to inhibit helping behavior, a phenomenon termed the bystander effect. If no one else is helping, why should you? And in this study, among participants who did not meditate, the bystander effect was on clear display. Only 16% of them offered their chair to the actor on crutches. But of those who meditated, half immediately and spontaneously offered their seat to the woman. They replicated the experiment with half the participants using a smartphone mindfulness app and the other half using cognitive skills training on a web-based brain training program. And this was just for 3 weeks. They too were tested in the waiting room with similar results. While only 14% of the non-meditators offered their chair to the woman on crutches, 37% of the meditators acted to relieve her pain. Now, these scientific experiments don't explain why practicing mindfulness meditation leads to increased compassion. They simply quantify that it does indeed happen, that meditation might fundamentally alter how we treat those around us, that mindfulness and kindness are indeed related. Now, as we consider the increasing polarization and fragmentation in our society, it would be nice to think that if everyone started practicing mindfulness and meditation, everyone would start treating each other with more care and compassion, with kindness. Heck, the participants in the study became more compassionate in 3 weeks using a smartphone app. And as we're faced with the holidays coming forward, I can imagine that you have some people in your lives that you wish would start meditating. Yes? While some here might make a commitment to meditation, and I recommend the Tuesday evening meditation group if you'd like to start practicing in company with others, surely we can find other ways to be mindful, to pay attention, in ways that will help us feel more compassion and act with more kindness. Now, it's no accident we had a child dedication on the day we're considering paying attention to kindness and compassion. Because of their vulnerability and innocence, it seems so much easier to act kindly toward children. Look at that face. And our opening hymn seems such an appropriate one to sing to our children, doesn't it? According to the UUA song information site, this hymn, written by Shelley Denham, was based on children's yearning for truth, respect, and engagement with adults, and is meant as a reminder that all children deserve and need compassion, acceptance, commitment. but don't we all? And when we dedicate our children in this community, we make promises to all of our children to love them, respect them, encourage them, inspire them, to pay attention to them. And today I suggest that we should make promises not just to our children, but also to each other and to the rest of the people in our lives. Promises to pay attention. Now, Sharon Salzberg speaks to the increasing fragmentation of our society, despite and because of the technology that claims our attention. We can connect over time and distance with email and texting, Skype and Zoom. But increasingly, the time when we are physically together gets interrupted by the same technology that can connect us. Have you ever been distracted by the chirp of your phone when a message comes in? Or found yourself looking at a text or an email when someone in the room was talking to you? Yes? And while the proliferation of technology can help us cultivate relationships, Salzberg notes that the ease with which we fire off messages can detract from the sense of deliberateness and ultimately from the meaning in our relationships. The sense of deliberateness, that resonates for me. I'm guessing none of you have ever written an email, perhaps at work, about a particularly frustrating situation, using less than diplomatic language, and in your fervor, replied all, instead of sending it to that one person. Or maybe you hit send on a text before checking to make sure that the autocorrect function hadn't completely garbled your message. Sometimes in strange and awful ways. If you have, then you understand the importance of that sense of deliberateness and trained yourself to stop, take a breath, and reread the message before hitting send. Think about the difference between dashing off an email and actually sitting down to write a letter that will go through the mail, whether you write it by hand or write it on the computer and print it out. There's a difference in the quality of those communications, isn't there? A sense of deliberateness, taking the time to find just the right words, folding the paper and slipping it into an envelope, addressing it and putting it on a stamp, walking down to the mailbox and putting up the flag to alert the postal worker. Does anybody else sometimes kiss the envelope? No one else does that? Oh, I've never done it. But there is a sense of deliberateness, mindfulness. As we think about the connection between mindfulness and kindness in our own lives, what would happen if we use that image of sending a letter instead of an email as a way of testing and confirming how present we are, how much we're paying attention? Now, those who have meditation practices know the benefits that you've felt in your lives. Such a practice can lend a sense of calmness because it helps us to respond instead of reacting. When you practice over and over and over again, non-judgmentally noticing that your mind has wandered from your breath, you can do the same with the rest of your life. When someone says or does something that disturbs you or surprises you in some way, you can notice it without judgment or with curiosity. instead of reacting with a rush of judgment and emotion. And as Karen mentioned, we have a chance to practice following the service today here in the sanctuary with the bridging conversation, more curious, less furious. Admittedly, it's harder when we don't have a meditation practice, but all of us can practice paying attention to ourselves and to others by taking a breath, being deliberate, being mindful, paying attention to the present moment and to the people who are in it. And when we do, we can notice so much more about the whole situation, how we feel about it, how others are feeling about it. And then we can behave in the ways we most like to, with compassion and kindness. Compassion means literally to suffer with, to feel with. But we can't feel with or be with people unless we are fully present to and with them, unless we pay attention. We chose our closing hymn as an embodiment of kindness and compassion, but it wasn't until I... Nope, don't move yet. I'm still talking. Be present. We chose this hymn because it felt like an embodiment of kindness and compassion. But it wasn't until I was writing the sermon that I found these words from the composer, Mimi Bornstein-Doble. This is what she said. "It was written on a day when I wasn't doing my life very well or very gracefully. My partner and I were being quite snarly with each other. I didn't want to be around people and was generally feeling intolerant. I was in no mood to be nice, loving, or anything of the sort. We were visiting friends who lived on a mountaintop in Northern California. The house had no power or running water. But luckily for me, it did have a baby grand piano in fairly good tune. It was glossy white, no less. I kept expecting Liberace to walk in." That's a reference that some of you won't know. Look it up on the internet. Liberace lived out loud. She continues, "Music has always had the ability to take me out of myself, or more into myself, as the case may be. It was in this spirit that I went to the piano that day. I sat there for a while and just let my fingers wander around the keys. After a while, a chord progression presented itself. As I began to feel better, I decided to ask for guidance in how to get out of the terrible mood I had succumbed to. And then came the words. They were a combination of a prayer and a plea. As I began to believe the words that I was singing, I was able to lighten up and find compassion for myself, then my partner, and then the others we were with. I continued to sing the song to myself until I felt ready to carry that gentle, compassionate energy with me." Isn't that a great story? Only in Northern California would you have no power and water and a white baby grand piano. So I want to leave us with that same energy of compassion. So if you need your hymnal, it's 1002 in the teal hymnal. But once you get the pattern of the song, I invite you to put the hymnal now. And Wayne will lead us with the words. Please rise in body or in spirit.
sing with me. Sing with me. Sing with me. Sing with me, oh my soul. Sing with me. Sing with me. Sing with me, oh my soul. Speak for me. Speak for me. Speak for me. Speak for me, oh my soul. Speak with me. Speak for me. Speak for me, oh my soul. Dance with me. Dance with me, dance with me, dance with me, oh my soul. Dance with me, dance with me, dance with me, oh my soul. Comfort me. Comfort me, comfort me, comfort me, oh my soul. Comfort me, comfort me, comfort me, oh my soul.
Take a hand. A shoulder, an elbow. Feel the connection between and among us. Let's take a breath. I invite you in the week ahead to be present, to be mindful, and to be kind. Amen and blessed be.